Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh,
no, how would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.
Welcome to Giles Corran Has No Idea. It's called this not because I literally know nothing, but because it's all about the moment in the week when I have to sit down and write my column but have absolutely no idea what to write it about, which is where my wife Esther comes in, who, having read all the papers whilst I take the kids to school, always has half a dozen ideas picked out for me when I get back to be discussed at the kitchen table over a nice cup of coffee.
This is our last podcast of the series.
It is. It's not our last podcast forever, or is it?
Or is it? Who knows?
And what a long way we've come.
I know. We started with a massive great big row.
And we just had a little massive great big row.
Had a little
Do you think that people can tell when we've had a massive row?
Nope.
You see, Ben did record it all. Do you want to tell them why we had a massive row?
No, I don't want to tell
them. We were having a perfectly okay morning, weren't we? I think it's the tension that I'm about to go away.
Is this our exit row? We always have an exit row and a re-entry row whenever
because
you go away.
Tonight, after recording this podcast, well, immediately after recording this podcast, I'm going to go upstairs and start packing. And then I'm going away for a week, for the first of 6 weeks of being away to film, I was about to say my stupid bloody hotel show, but people from the BBC might be listening. So, I mean, my excellent, really popular, and it is really popular, and it's important that I do my hotel show. And 3 million people watch it every week, and I travel around the world going to hotels. Yeah, as soon as I've done this podcast, I'm going to have to go and start packing. And then I'm off to glamorous Scotland for an entire week.
But you're going to some mist-shrouded, wonderful
Well, I assume so, given that it's an amazing hotel. I'm going to miss this fellow who's climbing onto my shoulder.
Little Mo Tenzing, yeah, who you've now trained to sleep on your neck while you're having a nap.
I know. It's amazing to think. When we did this podcast, 2 weeks ago, they just arrived.
Yeah.
And they were hiding in rolled-up yoga mats and other special North London hiding places. that's just... And he's now, so good at not really scratching me. And now he's up by the mic. There's the microphone. You're going to talk to him, Mo Tenzing.
Say meow.
Say something. Say meow, Mo Tenzing. Yeah, and now we've got these... It's 2 weeks have gone and the cats are just totally at home and I've got to go away. I'm going to miss them horribly. I now have my afternoon nap with Mo Tenzing sleeping on my neck, just going...
Let's move on to...
Well, anyway, that's why we had a row, because I'm about to go away and you pretend it's all fine, but you're inwardly resentful. And then...
Yeah, well...
And then look at your face.
What's wrong with my face?
It looks like the Queen's resting face. Just incredibly sort of grumpy and fucked
up. I will take that as a compliment. Okay, your column. I think you should rewrite the lyrics to Jerusalem.
Why?
Because as you know, I'm always desperate to get you to do lyrics because I think that you're great at lyrics and poems and stuff and like they're some of the best things.
Well, what's the news story? It's meant to be a news thing.
Okay, so the news story that this has come from is the news that Jerusalem is Britain's number one hymn.
In what sense? What do you mean it's number one hymn? What does that mean? Is there a chart? There's no chart for hymns. Is it up from number three? Was it Amazing Grace and then All Creatures Great and Small and then this?
The Songs of Praise. The viewers of Songs of Praise have voted it their number one most favourite hymn. I thought it's always been the UK's
No one gave
hymn.
The remotest shit about Jerusalem until the Ashes cricket series in 2005 when the crowd started singing it. Mm-hmm. I bet the number two is Swing Low Sweet Chariot. That's not really a hymn, is it?
Because
the rugby people sing Swing Low Sweet Chariot. Cricket people sing Jerusalem. And football people sing...
You're shit and you know you are.
Yeah, which they also got from Westminster Abbey. Jerusalem is the number one song. It's because it's always being played at the cricket and sporting things. It won't be voted for by people in church. People who go to church don't vote on things. They just leave it all to
It was a poll by Songs of Praise.
Really?
Yeah, I think Songs of Praise is listened to by reasonably church-going people.
And there's a long news story got in your hand.
It's
what does
a very
it say?
Long news story. Well, it's all about...
What is the headline?
The headline is, what a score, rugby hymn Jerusalem.
Oh, right,
is
so it is about
one.
The rugby. It is about the rugby. So...
Okay. It is a rugby song, but it was also our school's school hymn, Jerusalem, isn't it?
Yes, but I mean, that was quite preparatorial. That was our school thinking that it was more important than it is. I mean, it's, you know, we didn't have a school hymn because they were all, everyone was too busy working.
So they
used to sing Jerusalem at sort of the end of term. But it's also the Women's Institute anthem.
Yes.
I mean, anyone who hasn't really got a song just goes Jerusalem, and they hear it's the England cricket team, it's crappy old Westminster School, it's the Women's Institute. And I guess it looks to me like that story, what it looks to me from the headline that you've read out, it sounds like they're saying that when hymns of praise have a vote
songs
on...
Songs of praise, yeah.
When songs of praise have a vote on the most popular hymn, what happens is that a hymn from the rugby gets to be number one. Does it say what's number two?
Wait a second, but it does say that Jerusalem doesn't feature on the list of the top 10 last time the survey was conducted in 2013.
Hang on, wait a minute. It reminds me, I used to have a thing because the funny thing about it is that it's bollocks, Jerusalem. So I used to have a thing when I used to write the Times Diary, which was fascinating.
I'm sorry. What is wrong with the hymn Jerusalem?
Well, it's based on a massive, pathetic, patriotic misconception, classic 18th century imperial delusion. And did those feet in ancient times, whose feet do you think they're talking about?
Jesus.
Yeah, walk upon England's mountains green.
No.
No. So what are the other 17 lines for? And was the Holy Lamb of God on England's... No.
No,
not at all. It totally wasn't. And did the countenance divine shine forth upon these crowded or clouded hills?
Crowded. Clouded. I don't know.
Whatever. No.
No.
It didn't.
No.
It didn't. And was Jerusalem builded here?
No.
No.
But
again,
it's only
no.
Whimsical. I think I'm being very hard on the nation's favourite hymn.
Do you mean, so then the column would be, how about, because I used to do a thing in the Times Diary, fascinating historical questions to which the answer is no. And I'd open up the Daily Mail and it would say, was King Arthur a Phoenician mercenary brought to Britain in chains by the Romans to work in a tin mine? And then they'd have 14... No, he wasn't.
It's like all the... What, Channel 4.
My favourite one was, did Adolf Hitler's bad teeth cause the Holocaust? No. It was the 2,000 years of European anti-Semitism with a collapsing Reichmark is what caused the Holocaust. But they try and frame it. So, and I remember, and then I invited readers to come in. What was a fascinating historical question? And they would call them out of the paper. And then somebody wrote in with, and did those feet in ancient times?
Right.
No, and it's a thing the answer... It could be a version of Jerusalem to which the answers are all yes.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it start?
And did those feet in ancient times?
And did those feet in ancient times walk about in Palestine, never having heard of England?
Yes!
And did the countenance divine shine forth upon the Sea of Galilee while we were all eating fucking thistles and living in holes in the ground?
Yes!
And was Jerusalem builded in Israel while we just swung from trees and had sex with our sisters? Yes! And then they sing that in your fucking Women's Institute. Right, there's that idea dealt with. We've got the classic laughing Esther back from her having a massive piss about me spoiling her shout out. Now you're in a good mood,
what?
Esther. Yeah. Do your shout out to the African bush.
I don't want to, no.
I'm going to do it for you.
Fine.
So we've got a bloke in New Zealand who walks around a lake in listening to the podcast. Maybe we could ask him if we could come and live with him. Because that's where billionaires are going to go and live when Armageddon. As we're not billionaires, maybe we can come and live with our listener. So big shout out to them. And also, we've had a shout out from... We want to shout out to someone in the Kenyan bush. They are listening now at the sound of the buffaloes and the tigers. I don't know what does it sound like, the Kenyan bush? Esther's very excited because Esther loves Africa and she spent part of her year off in Namibia and we went to Kenya.
Not only my year off, it wasn't just a gap year thing. I have actually been at other
times. She has a deep and soulful commitment to the Dark Continent.
I do.
And so do we. One of our best friends lives there and is a Kenyan, and now we turn out to have a listener in Kenya who plays it in the bush. And she's telling me
she's called Lucinda.
And she's a film producer.
She's a film producer, and she's just produced a film called The Elephant Queen, which is a documentary it took 10 years to make about the journey of a female elephant across Kenya, and it's being screened in London I think next week, and she's very kindly invited us. But
why has she invited us? Because she listens to the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I think she's a fan
and
of the podcast.
You're saying Chiwetel Ejiofor is in it?
He's narrating it.
Does he listen to our podcast by any chance?
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it?
Because he could come on.
I think it's a very rare, as it being a nature documentary that's not narrated by David Attenborough, so it's very kind of
nice.
It's a rare
maybe
thing,
Chiwetel is going to be the new David Attenborough. wanging on about the environment and how we're all going to die.
Not an easy listen. Not that he's wrong.
Not that he's wrong. Does she have? Does she have to pedal the bicycle to generate the power to play it?
But we used to have to do that when I was in Namibia to generate power. Yeah, we had a bicycle hooked up to a generator, or maybe it was some weird displacement activity. But that's how we used to generate power in the bush when I lived in the bush.
In the days before podcasts. Anyway, I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, it is good. Hi, Lucinda. Thanks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, given that people listen to this podcast and listen to the, and what they do, Ben told me this, he's saying that they listen to one and they like it so much that they binge listen and listen to like 12 in a row. Oh. We have to remember, I always think it's a good idea to set the, you know, to set the what's happening this week, because we'll probably bollock on and talk about our cats and any old rubbish. So we need to let people know what's happening in the week. What's happening this week is Brexit is still happening.
Still?
This has been the background of every single show. One day people will look back at this show from the 23rd century and go, God, is that, remember those, that brief moment when Giles and Esther's podcast happened during Brogsging? What was it called? Brexit?
Yeah.
I know what, look, talk about the fact. This is quite interesting, and it applies also, can be applied to our household. I've written one of my, no disposable cups. So yesterday at conference, there was this wonderful scene, which is an attempt at management that went totally to piss, where Boris is sort of striding through the conference centre, on the people are shouting out, you know,
Boris,
you're, you know, and he's embattled by, so Boris got a lot of problems. Yeah. He's not going to get us out on the 31st. Yeah. He's today is the day he launched his plan. He's finally said what his deal is going to be. There is going to be a hard border in Ireland. That isn't going to work. We are not going to leave. Meanwhile, Charlotte says that he squeezed a, you know, big handful of flesh up the thigh. There's the American woman with the pole dancing thing who Boris went round to her house
and they
for
gave
tech lessons seven times a week. She has a pole and she has pole dancing kit, but in this case Boris just had computing lessons, and then an aide put into his hand a cup of coffee and he went, oh, thank you very much, and he was about to take a glug when another aide grabbed it from him and is seen to mutter, no disposable cups, because that's the thing that could bring Boris fucking Johnson down. The man who's shagged everything and everybody, shouted at his wife, allegations of beatings, people lit into the windows, the whole, they burn effigies off him because he's politically insubstantial and a hypocrite. Oh, but he's seen with a non-disposable, with a disposable cup.
It's all a bit the thick of it, isn't it?
It's all a bit the thick of it. And so the people are saying that this is so terrible, that it's so micromanaged. Actually, I think that has happened. That's brought the notion of disposable cups more to the fore. It's better that they're trying to show him without a disposable cup, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. Yes,
I know you care deeply about this thing because you've instigated a new way of making coffee in this house, haven't you?
Oh, well, I've just, you know.
Only me. This morning did
I'm
discover.
I'm just a simple housewife and I like trying new things. And I was advertised on Ocado, where I do my weekly shop, a new system of making coffee in coffee bags. So it's like a tea bag, but it's coffee.
So I was making coffee happily with the way that I've made it for 2,000 years, just pouring the thing. And then you said, oh, look, coffee bags. Mm. And it's, first of all, it's a cardboard box. And you open the cardboard box and inside it is 10 plastic sachets.
They're not plastic, they're recyclable.
Are they?
Yeah.
They're sort of slightly... And inside,
tea bags certainly
inside
are.
The sachets is a tea bag.
Yeah.
So that's, so there's three layers
a compostable,
of packaging.
A compostable tea
is
bag.
Is it, though,
yes.
Because it was revealed recently the most tea bags aren't compostable, because particularly the posh ones, because they have, that was in the news as well. That's why this is news today. So basically, where I had coffee that I felt quite bad about throwing the bag away and really thought I should grow my own beans out there, then roast them using solar power, and then grind them using my elbows and then make coffee. You've actually got a box with two different levels of bag in.
Yeah. I probably won't buy them again.
Yeah, you can never be Prime Minister if you do shit like that.
That's the reason I'm not going to be Prime Minister. I'm not enough of a groper.
Well, yeah, but you've never been groped.
I've never been groped either.
No.
I might have groped someone.
The man lost his car. Wait a minute, sorry, what did you say?
I might have... I'm just thinking maybe I've groped people.
When you say... Go on.
I'm just thinking. Maybe I did. Maybe I have done. I'm just wondering. I'm sure it'll come out eventually.
I've been footsied.
By who?
As you know. I went...
Oh, that
no,
woman.
So I don't know. So at a party in Devon, in a pub, with a lot of people around the table. I was at the time actually single, technically. And
12 minutes.
And there was the woman at the table next to me, whose husband was at the other end of a table of 14.
Yeah.
And the woman started to... And I felt her foot on my... leg, and she was very, very wealthy and powerful, by the way, which I wasn't then. I'm not now, but even less so then. And and I thought it was a mistake, and I looked, and then she started to do it, and then she took her shoe off, and it went up my leg, and I started. You know how if someone touches the inside of my knee, it makes my right testicle contract, which is like not in a sexual way, just like, which is where you used to go careful, because there's just bits of me that are strangely wired. So this woman did that, and
you were
29
and she was 50.
She was 40,
yeah,
and I was 29, and she did that and it all up my thigh, and then we ended up I've never done anything like that to anyone. She literally, we'd only known each other about 4 hours, and she was touching the inside of my thigh with her foot, and then later came for me, and we did it, and that's fine. You know how boring that'll have been for her, and taught her a real lesson. But that's the only close thing I've ever had is someone doing it to me.
Do you think after that episode she would think again about...
doing it to anyone?
Doing it
to... All you get at the end is a...
Wasn't there someone who wrote a book about how she was celibate for a year and it was just after she...
Oh, don't.
And you know what to say? Can't talk about that.
Yes,
it's really
funny. There is out there an author who wrote a book.
Book about becoming celibate. Yeah. After she'd had a short relationship with
She hadn't had a short relationship with me. We'd met at a party when I was somewhat incapacité, par le booze et la drogue. And we came back here, not here, to my flat across the road. And we had one of those long nights of...
awkward.
Where I go, this doesn't normally happen. Because you can't say, this happens all the time. And she went, no, it doesn't matter. And I said, it's all about you. And she goes, I know. And then at the end, she goes, well, it was fun anyway, because we got to fool around more, even though we all know that without that kind of actual closure. And she shuffled off into the night. And like, a few years later, out came this book about my year of celibacy.
And it began on the morning of June.
I appear in three different female journalist memoirs as the crap shag, and you haven't even written yours yet.
There's another one
where there's a story which is not true. There's another one with a story, and she comes back to my flat, and she talks about the photos of the girlfriend that are hastily turned over face down, which isn't true, but the girlfriend she describes sounds very much like the girlfriend I might have had at the time.
Yeah.
And then she tells this story and it blames it all on me when it was all her fault. And there's another one. There's literally three.
Well, at least you're not saying she's lying.
And none of these women, by the way, no one has ever accused me of any kind of grope or anything like that, because I never have done anything like that.
Yeah.
All these women who have put me in their memoirs are women who came after me at a party, dragged me home, pulled my trousers off, and then I wasn't able to do anything because it was all so stressful.
Well,
and they've all pissed on me for that.
Well, it's because you look so naughty, but actually you're not. You look like you just do sort of terrible things, you know, in sort of private, all sorts of like scary sort of things. But actually, you're not like that at all. And I think it's probably, I don't know, speaking from experience, it's quite confusing. But then, you know, one adjusts one's parameters of expectation, and then it's all fine. Spies.
Yes.
Okay, so there's this story that's rumbling on about spies at the Clifden Literary Festival, which has just happened. Sir Richard Dearlove, who's the former head of MI6, was in conversation with someone doing an event at the Clifden Literary Festival, and he criticised John le Carré and Dame Stella Rimington for writing books about their experiences with the intelligence services. He thinks it's a really bad...
Well, Stella Remington wrote a memoir literally about what happened, and John Le Carré's written 50 years of novels loosely based, but he puts them in the same bracket.
But wasn't John Le Carré in the Foreign Office for like 18 months and then left and just like endlessly wrote about
it? Exactly. He just he cleans some toilets.
So they did quite a long story in the paper on Monday. Headline is Ex-Spy Chief Throws the Book at Le Carré and Remington. He's saying that... Stella Remington's book made former colleagues extremely angry. He says, Stella is a greatly admired colleague. We did a lot together operationally before she became head of the service, but she was extremely badly behaved. Which
he means in...
in writing this book.
And Le Carré similarly.
And Le Carré, they get annoyed with Le Carré because he makes spies out to be just sort of traitors and double dealers. And cool. I have got to say, I've tried reading Le Carré and it's just so...
And they've hit, and Le Carré's hit back.
Yeah,
see, so my argument, I don't know what you're going to say my column should be about, but I would say I have never understood a paragraph of Jean Le Carré, let alone a novel. I never know who did it at the end. He couldn't possibly reveal a national secret because he can't fucking express himself in clear and plain English. Everything is a mystery and you don't know who anybody is at any stage or which side they're working for.
Well, no, so Le Carré's not...
Maybe it's a double bluff. Maybe Dear Love is a double agent who's actually working for Le Carré's publishers and trying to cause up a thing by making it a big story when no one is really interested. Yes. John Le Carré and I have the same agent. Whenever I phone my agent, Johnny Geller, he goes, hi, Charles. Oh, sorry, Le Carré on the other line. Slam.
Bye.
That's why I haven't published a book for 15 years.
Today, John Le Carré has rebutted suggestions from the former MI6 director, Sir Richard Dearlove, that his novels have angered Britain's intelligence community by saying that they keep inviting him out for dinner. I mean, so there's something so petty and silly about... First of all, it's sort of ridiculous. I think Stella Remington's book was a bit... I mean, the idea of sort of spies just kind of writing a door, and then I opened up a file and I wrote out a load of code names.
And then I stamped top secret on top of it with
red
splosher.
Yeah, no, red splosher. Well, my dad was in the Foreign Office for a while, and we all sort of slightly suspect that he was a spy, but mostly because he's always very dismissive about any spy things going. Spy work is all incredibly boring.
I'm about to say something which I feel like I've said before, which makes me then think that you've got a spy fixation. But I've said before, really, Ben McIntyre does the spy things.
Yes.
I think I said that last week, which means you've got a spy fixation and you keep bringing out these spy stories. Ben will have written something. Ben will write something for Saturday about this fucking spy thing.
Oh, fine.
But Ben, for the 30 years working for the Times, has managed to find a big topical spy story every week to write something about. I mean, occasionally he'll write something historical which isn't quite spies, but basically if I phone up and say I'm doing the spies, sorry, Ben Mack's doing the spies, Ben's doing the spies.
Oh, well, that's fine.
And to be fair, no, but to be fair, the thing I would do, the thing that my dad would have been able to do or something would have been to do the spoof. It would be, but I couldn't do it. Can you, what's John Le Carré's style? I don't know.
Just pick up any old book and just write a spoof.
I'd have to do a Bond one. Bond is thinking of writing his autobiography.
Okay, well, come on. What are your brilliant
ideas? I want to write about
then?
The world's oldest restaurant.
Oh, yeah, that one black place in Italy.
So there's a restaurant in... Have I got the paper somewhere? If it was on page 3 of yesterday's Times, it'll be right here. Is it there? Yes, it is. Cafe dines out on being world's oldest. Okay, so a tiny trattoria in Rome that specialises in tripe... Everyone has to go, bleh, but actually, I quite like tripe, poo sausage, and boasts Caravaggio, Goethe, and Keith Richards among its past customers, has laid claim to be the world's oldest restaurant and hopes to knock a Spanish rival out of the record books. So there's a Spanish restaurant, Sobrino de Botín, in Madrid, and it's been open since 1725 and has been widely regarded as the world's oldest restaurant. It serves its suckling pig, well, instead of its suckling pig from an oven where the flame is said never to have been extinguished.
Wow.
Bollocks.
Right.
It's bollocks. Absolute bollocks. Yeah. There's no way that's a 300-year-old fire that's been going. They can't even do the Olympic thing. It goes out for a week.
And also, that's just dangerous.
Yeah, Spanish health and safety regulations are pretty rough.
No, but just in terms of...
What, a fire that's never... You mean...
You put your fire out, don't you? You put your fire out and shut the thing so it doesn't burn the whole of London down.
Well, no, it would burn the whole of Madrid, which would be less terrible. I think they're probably quite proud of the fact that it's... But anyway, so there's a place called La Campagna in Rome, And it claims to be the oldest, and it's going back to the 16th century, specialises in these Roman dishes like tripe, like sweetbreads, which all comes, and this is an interesting thing I've learnt that I didn't know. So Rome is famously, we went to Rome and had seven or eight very bad meals served by grumpy waiters in shitholes and then couldn't get into the Colosseum and then paid £14,000 and left.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, the oldest and shittest city in the world.
We did not have a good time in Rome.
But they have this thing, and I was looking around for sort of authentic food, and what they eat, what they love is, what is Rome is famous for is tripe and offal and these kind of things. This is because for hundreds of years, when the animals were slaughtered, all the nice meat went to the Vatican.
Right.
And all that was left was the soppy inside, which they threw out the back door, and the Romans cooked that stuff up, and that's why Roman food is all that kind of thing. But anyway... So this claims to be now the oldest restaurant in the world. They think they've got evidence that, well, they haven't got. There's a guy called she found a 15th. So a guy called Pietro della Campagna had a receipt for a tax payment for the upkeep of the road just outside. So he must have owned the restaurant, they reckon. And this was in 1518, proving it was 500 years old, more than 200 years older than its Spanish rival. And Caravaggio lived around the corner, and they reckon on that basis probably went there. Much like they'll say about Pizza East down the road in 500 years. Well, there's evidence that Giles Corran and Esther Walker, with their famous podcast, lived only four doors up, so they obviously went there.
But they can't say that about Aces and Eights, because we've never been there.
I went there the other night.
Yeah, I know you did, but you don't go there regularly.
There's evidence that the tube station was there, and Giles Corran may have come home off his tits one night and staggered in...
to Aces and Eights, and then woke up 10 minutes later saying, what am I doing here?
What am I doing here? So anyway, this is reckoned it's the oldest restaurant in the world, and Italy and Spain are vying for it. But I, as Britain's leading restaurant critic, are going to stand up for the oldest restaurant in the world. It's actually a British restaurant.
Is it?
Dating from...
Oh, no. Oh, God.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, no.
Be supportive.
Oh, no, don't.
Dating from...
No.
8,000 BC.
God, oh, my God.
I set the scene. Salisbury Plain.
Oh, my God.
A rock. No. There's a man in a bow tie, otherwise wearing bearskins. Stan, look, you and Ben are both laughing. The cats are pissing themselves. This is obviously a good idea. If it's this shit, you can't... And,
does anyone
and
say...
He's got a big haunch of woolly mammoth turning on a spit, okay? And across the plain... Shush, no, don't interrupt. You don't shoot me down your head. And so there he's standing there with it roasting on a spit, and he's got some upturned wooden stumps all sitting there waiting to be sat. And two people come across, they come across Salisbury Plain, and they finally get there, and he goes, have you got a reservation? And they go, what? Have you got a reservation? What's a reservation?
Can we sit there? No, I'm saving that one.
No, I'm saving that
for
in
who?
Case Stephen Fry might come in. So, like, these two Stone Age people, they arrive and they go, and you go, have you got a reservation? They go, and then he sits them in this table. Can we have a nicer table? No. And then he comes over and
they say, can we see your wine list?
He says,
no. I've got a really nice old one. It's 2 years old. Or something.
No,
it's like,
they didn't have grapes yet. No, he goes.
Oh, they didn't have.
But
grapes
it's a
yet.
Question of no. So and then the way then it's like the husband and wife are sitting there going, oh, he hasn't taken our order. Have you got a wallet? What have you brought the saber toothed tiger bones to pay for the dinner with? Then the waiter comes over and goes, ouch! I just dropped the menu on my toe because it was carved in stone. And then it goes, well, we've got a mammoth, we've got Tyrannosaurus Rex,
we've got some mammoth,
pterodactyl, and the woman goes, I'm a vegetarian. You've been listening to Giles Corran Has No Idea with Giles Corran and Esther Walker. It's a Times podcast produced by Ben Mitchell. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to avoid ever missing an episode. If you want to find out what I wrote about in the end, there's a link to the column in the podcast description. And for the full live experience, you can tune into my radio show every Sunday night from 7 till 10 p.m. on Talk Radio.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.